Professor Joshua A. Douglas, an expert on our electoral system, joins us this morning to present an encouraging assessment of current efforts to make our voting system more accessible, reliable, and effective. His new book is Vote for Us: How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. In contrast to the anxiety surrounding our voting system, with stories about voter suppression and manipulation, there are actually quite a few positive initiatives toward voting rights reform. Douglas says regular Americans are working to take back their democracy, one community at a time. Douglas is a professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law. His most recent scholarship focuses on the constitutional right to vote, with an emphasis on state constitutions, as well as the various laws, rules, and judicial decisions impacting election administration. It's a great pleasure to welcome Professor Joshua A. Douglas to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Very nice to have you. What brought you to want to look at this guide, ultimately, of taking back our elections?
Well, there's so much doom and gloom when it comes to the right to vote and our democracy in general, it seems like. You know, the common storyline is that the right to vote is under attack, that voter suppression is on the rise, that it's difficult to participate in our democracy, and even, oh, I'll use the R word, the system seems rigged, and both sides feel it. But as someone who studies voting rights, I know that there's actually a lot of good news on the ground in communities all over the country of people working on what I call positive voting rights reforms, ways that are making our election system more inclusive, more democratic, and more convenient to participate. And so I really wanted to tell the stories of these people and provide some hope that there is a way out and there is a way to promote positive stories in addition to fighting back against the doom and gloom.
The subtitle of the book is How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. Did we ever have it right?
Well, I don't know if we've ever had it perfectly right. You know, the history of the right to vote has been one of fits and starts, or both expansions and contractions. I mean, certainly in our founding, we didn't have it right when only white men with property could vote. So, you know, we've marched along towards progress, towards more inclusivity. But I think where we have it right is certain places. Certain states and localities are doing things a lot better than other places. And what we see is a more engaged electorate and better turnout. And so I want to focus on the places that are doing things a lot better now to tell the story that, hey, these can expand to other places as well.
We hear that phrase a lot, of taking back our elections. Who are we taking them from?
The elites, the entrenched interests who have only their own re-election as the focus on the voting rules. You know, I like to think that our elections should depend on the best candidates and the best ideas and issues winning, and not the election rules. Yet too often our election rules and the way we process election day in our democracy has such a huge impact and influence on who wins. So it's really taking it back from those elected officials or the elite who only have themselves in interest and bringing it back to the people.
Obviously, one of the things that you tackle in the book is young people and getting young people out to vote. So how do we do that? It's something that has been a struggle for many decades. And what can be done to bring those voters to the voting booth?
Well, I think there are a number of things that can be done. One that I focus on is lowering the voting age to 16, at least for local elections, because a handful of places have been doing this already. It started with Tacoma Park, Maryland, in 2013. And one thing we see in places that have done this is that turnout among 16 and 17-year-olds is generally double that of 18 to 29-year-olds. And these are for local or school board elections that don't typically have high salience or high turnout. And one of the biggest predictors of whether someone's going to vote is whether they voted previously. Voting is habit forming, and so is non-voting. And so if you miss the first election when you're an eligible voter, you're less likely to become a habitual voter. And then coupled with lowering the voting age, we need to improve civics education in a meaningful manner. And I think the combination of these two things can create a whole new generation of engaged voters.
Many people are engaged, and yet they still can't vote. How do we get the people who are coming to the polls, and for whatever reason, that because of where they live, because of the makeup of the community, the demographic makeup of the community, they are not able to fairly and accurately vote?
Well, there's a number of reforms, I think. You know, one that your question calls to directly is redistricting reform, where, you know, the politicians draw the lines to ensure that they can have easy reelection. You know, they're choosing their voters instead of the other way around. And so you get to these districts where you feel like your vote really won't matter because the lines have been drawn demographically in a way that should dictate the outcome in so many of these districts. And yet there are places that are working on independent redistricting reform, where nonpartisan bodies work on the lines where they don't have as much self-interest. Combine that with a different way of voting known as ranked choice voting, which is starting to take hold, where instead of having to vote for one person, you can rank order your preferences. You know, people have preferences on all sorts of things. I open a chapter in the book on ranked choice voting, talking about how I have preferences in my favorite ice cream flavors. And yet if my favorites are not there on the day I go to the ice cream shop, I'm not going to turn away and not have ice cream that day. And the same goes with candidates. And so part of the problem of low voter engagement and then people who do show up who feel like they aren't represented is this voter apathy, because they feel like their vote won't actually matter or make a difference. But with things like redistricting reform and the adoption of ranked choice voting, again, that's working already in some places, people will start to feel much more ownership in the elections and the results.
Let's talk about that, of things that are working in other places. So we look at this country as a country that has historically low voter turnout. So what can we learn from elsewhere?
Well, a lot of these reforms are being adopted in other countries, but also in certain states and localities in the United States. So we talked about lowering the voting age. That's taken hold in about a half dozen places. Ranked choice voting is used in several other countries, but also was adopted, the modern era of it was adopted in San Francisco in 2002. We actually used to use ranked choice voting or a form of it several decades ago. But more recently, San Francisco adopted it in 2002. It worked really well. The voters and the candidates love it. And then it started to spread to other places like St. Paul and Minneapolis, Minnesota, Portland, Maine. And then Maine statewide adopted it for its elections in 2018. So we had the first statewide use of ranked choice voting. And now other places are about to adopt it as well or implement it, like Memphis, Tennessee. So what you see is this slow progression of local movements, some that have the ideas have come from overseas, others just because democracy champions are advocating them in their own communities. You see them being implemented and then spreading to other cities and then eventually to states. You know, the Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once said that states can be laboratories of democracy, that one courageous state can try something new and innovative, and if it works, it'll spread to other states. And I like to say that if states are laboratories of democracy, then cities and towns can be test tubes of democracy for their own voting rights, adopting issues or ideas on a smaller scale that we'll see how they work, and then they can spread to other places.
And we have evidence that it does indeed spread, and it doesn't take too long. I mean, one of the things is that you look at the importance of all elections and wonder why in the course of our voting history it has taken so long to see fundamental changes.
Well, I think that in some ways it has taken a long time, and in yet in other ways some change has been, you know, rapid. Again, if you think about who the eligible electorate was at our founding to now, it's a vastly different kind of electorate just in terms of voter eligibility. You know, but one thing is that we're a large country with lots of different politics and lots of different ideas about how things should be done, and we also like local control, but we like having evidence to support changes, people become entrenched in the ways in which they vote or the ways that their democracy works. And so I think it's really important to note that sometimes things take a long time because of that natural progression of spreading from local ideas to other localities and then to states. And then, you know, you have the result of what essentially is nationwide type adoption. You know, ranked choice voting, as I said, started most recently in 2002 in San Francisco, and not even 20 years later, we have a good number of places that are using it, including one state. That's pretty good progress, in my view.
So when it comes to changing the future of voting and these things that are being done locally or being done in towns, cities, villages, and hopefully going statewide and then nationwide, how do you see this ultimately as the end game of what we see and what is available to a voter when they head to the polls?
Yeah, well, so I have an ideal that is the result of all of these. I think that if we adopt all of these reforms and we dedicate ourselves to really championing these among grassroots efforts, that we can see something like 90% turnout. You know, right now, turnout in our presidential elections is 60%. In the 2018 midterm, it was nationwide 50%, and we were celebrating because it was record over decades for a midterm election. And I thought to myself, you know, what are we celebrating when half of the eligible electorate didn't show up? So I've strived for something really bold that includes more inclusivity in who can vote, whether we're talking about reenfranchising felons or lowering the voting age, at least for local elections. We talk about registration issues and making it much easier to register election day itself and making it much more convenient, whether it's through ideas like universal vote by mail, also known as vote at home, or making it as easy as possible for disabled voters, breaking down some of these structural barriers through redistricting reform or campaign finance reform. I think if we do all of these, including improving civics education from K through 12 and up, then we'll get to a place where we can actually be close to 90% turnout. And, you know, if we don't hit 90% and, you know, we come close, 70, 75, that's pretty darn good compared to what we are right now.
And when it comes to politics being in the act of voting and whatever party seems to be in charge or in power at any given time, they can have an effect on how people vote. So how do we get the politics out of voting?
Well, in some ways, it's going to be impossible to. But as I like to say, we should espouse an ideal that the best candidates and ideas win and not the rules of the game. But I would point to some of these reforms that are working on a bipartisan basis, whether it's reenfranchising felons, whether it's redistricting reform that really has been embraced in places like Michigan on a bipartisan way. Small changes are possible, and once we get some of these smaller changes, then that breeds some trust for what can happen in the future. But, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, aren't these reforms just a ploy to help one side over the other? And my answer is, I don't know and I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter what the political ramifications are for these reforms to me. What matters is that we have a democracy which includes everyone, every eligible voter who can vote easily, have it convenient, have their voice be heard. You know, if we're a democracy, that means we are governed based on the consent of the governed. And we need much better turnout, much easier access to our democracy to really get to that ideal.
Josh Douglas is the author of Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. The book is published by Prometheus. Josh, thanks very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Vote for Us by Joshua Douglas, professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.